The hour of 8 a.m. having arrived and actually passed, I'm going to call to order the Government Operations Reform Technology Elections Committee.
Okay.
First bill on the agenda is House File 3034. Rep. Mahoney, is he in the room? He is in the room. Rep. Mahoney, I'm going to move that House File 3034 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. Representative Mahoney, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. House File 3034 is the cleanup bill to House File 1208 from last year. The parts that touch on your committee are Sections 12, 13, and 62. Section 12 and Section 13 deal with maintenance electricians and master elevator constructors. What 12 and 13 do is they give credit when an electrician goes through 2 years of what we in the trade call day school, say 7 o'clock till 3 o'clock in the of school, 9 months out of the year. They get credit towards taking their license test. Generally, that license test, you have to have 10,000 hours of experience before you can take the test. So rather than work a 5-year apprenticeship, they'll work a 4-year apprenticeship. Section 62. Making sure I'm on the right. Yeah. On page 44, starting at line 34, it's deleting an oversight committee. And the duties and the responsibilities of the Oversight Committee in last year's bill, 1208, were given to the rulemaking board, the high pressure piping, plumbing, and the electrical board. And the department with that particular bill and the enforcement provisions in that bill has no need for a peer review board. That's the essence of this particular bill as I've been instructed that pertains to your committee.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Seeing no questions, do you have anyone to testify, Representative Mahoney?
Mr. Chair, there are about a dozen people from Dolly here just in case, and I don't think you want to hear from all of them.
All right. So, no questions, no one to testify. I'll renew my motion that House File 3034 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Representative Mason? There she is. Where does this go? Where? Where did this go?
Representative Mason, we're not sure where your bill should go from here. Why don't you explain the bill for us?
Okay.
And I'll move the bill, House File 2107, and we'll designate to where. So the bill's before us. Then there's a technical amendment, Mr. Shepherd. Is this? Mr. Shepherd has a technical amendment. Does the author have it?
Yes, I do. And
all right, the A2 amendment.
I would move that. I'd appreciate that as well.
Let's have Mr. Shepherd explain the amendment first.
Mr. Chair and members, this amendment, which is going to be coming around now, simply moves the location of the repealer so it would be in the codified section instead of an uncodified law, just so those reading the law would remember that this group expires.
And I'll move the A2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill is amended. Senator Mason, to your bill.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, committee members, House File 2107 is a bill to bring Minnesota into the 21st century by asking the governor to appoint a high-speed broadband task force to make recommendations to the governor and the legislature regarding the creation of a state high-speed broadband goal and a plan to implement that goal. The name of the group would be the High-Speed Broadband Task Force. Currently, there is no similar task force that exists. Members of the task force would be appointed by the governor. The governor is also responsible for designating one of the citizens at large of the task force to serve as chair, as well as convene the first meeting of all the task force members once they're appointed. And my bill also accommodates the appointment of some legislators to serve on that as well. The requirements for member representation on the task force are described in the first section of the bill. It attempts to create a balanced representation of metro and rural perspectives. The Department of Commerce is directed to provide logistical and administrative support to the task force, and they should be able to absorb those costs. This means that there is no fiscal note to this bill. The task force is required to submit a report to the governor as well as to the chairs and ranking minority members of the Senate and House committee with primary jurisdiction over the telecommunications policy. The report contains recommendations, including possible legislation for the development of a comprehensive statewide plan to create a high-speed broadband goal that the task force considers appropriate. There's further details in the bill, and the task force would expire on March 1st of 2010.
Mr. Mason, you,
that is the summary.
You stated that there was no compensation to the members of the task force, and that's
yes.
The reason that there is no fiscal note, is that correct?
Right.
All right. With no compensation, I believe we would just send this to the general register, unless there's discussion in the committee. Representative Kahn.
No compensation and no expenses?
Correct.
Okay.
Representative Mason.
I do have the fiscal note. There is no money involved with this. The Department of Commerce would be taking care of the meeting.
All right. Is there anyone that wishes to testify for the bill?
I'm taking it to chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Rebecca Kleff. I'm with the law firm of Locker Spindle now and today representing Thompson West. And we are here in support of Representative Mason's bill and are here to answer any questions.
All right. Any other questions? Seeing none, then I'll renew my motion that House File 2107, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Mason.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
Members, the next bill on the general register is Senate File 2511. This bill actually is a bill to correct a mistake. The Health Care Per Review Committee was inadvertently repealed. And all this bill does is take care of that inadvertentness. So Representative Rest has carried it. I believe Rest has it in the Senate. She asked that we deal with it here. I'm going to move that Senate File 2511 be recommended to pass and be sent to the general register. Does anyone have any discussion on making this correction? And that's why we should read the repealers. I know Representative Kahn. It wasn't my bill in the first place. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, then on these two, these also have no expenses to members and no cost to them?
Representative Kahn, I believe that is the case.
Mr. Chairman.
You believe or you
I
know?
I believe that is the case, Representative Kahn. I'm simply...
Why would I like you to say you know it's the case?
Representative Kahn, I'm using your terminology today.
Sure.
If you'd like it to go to finance, you can send it to finance.
No, I don't. I just want you to say that you're sure.
I'm as absolutely sure as I can be today. Representative Howes.
Mr. Chairman, is this your re-election bill?
Representative Howes, I believe it's Senator Rest's re-election bill, which causes me even more concern. All right, members, any further discussion? Seeing none, then I'll renew my motion that Senate File 2511 be recommended to pass and be sent to the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Dabney, did we see him somewhere? Is he being held up by the weather? He might be.
Is this opening yet?
He's upstairs. You did see him? All right. Members, I'm going to go to Senate File 248. Senate File 248, I'm going to recommend to pass and be sent to the General Register. We already passed this last year. It was sent back to us because of House Rule 4.2. This bill has gotten some notoriety this year with some press accounts, and Senator Skoglund's here, so I wish he would come up. This is actually the result of his idea. It is a bill that deals with, if you disband your campaign committee and you still have money in your account, you may want to give it to a charitable organization, and we found out there was a problem. So, Senator Skoglund, why don't you tell us about the problem and how this bill corrects it?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee. I'm amazed at your punctuality. It's rare where you see a committee show up on time like this one. When I chose not to run for re-election, my committee, my volunteer committee, wanted to give the money to the local community. Specifically, they wanted to give my campaign money to South High School. There are several students here from South. Roosevelt High School, none of those could be here, and the Minneapolis Library in the district. And we were told that you can't do that. It would be against law. Actually, it would be a crime if I did that. Because there's currently a $50 cap on what you can give to a charity from your campaign fund. That is a good law. You do not want to be hit up for large contributions from your campaign committee when you're planning on running for re-election. But this is not my re-election bill. This is my un-election bill. And it's about time that we gave something back to the community, my committee and I felt. And this will simply allow us to give the money to the Roosevelt Foundation, the South High Foundation, and the Minneapolis, and it's called Friends of the Library. And we'll be giving it to the Eastlake Library, the Roosevelt Library, and the Comus Library, the three libraries that were in my legislative district. And I think Larry there can recognize or identify with all of those entities.
Members, any questions? We did pass this bill last year. It didn't make it off the floor, so we're back at it again.
Mr. Chairman?
I just want to add one thing. The South High students have taken this on as a pilot project.
And we have some of them seated up there today. So thank you for coming this morning. Rep. Sam House.
Could we narrow the scope and make sure it stays with South and Roosevelt?
It's going to be South Roosevelt Library.
I don't think they'll do that today. Representative Kahn.
Just a point of information. I am sitting here surrounded by a Roosevelt graduate and a South graduate. So...
Representative Kahn, do we want to go any further than that? Or?
No.
All right. Good. Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that Senate File 248 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you.
Chairman, do we use the consent calendar anymore? Or?
Representative Kahn, to the point of the consent calendar, if we put something on the consent calendar, as you know, it can almost instantly be taken off. That's another motion. If anyone has any problems with this bill, and note that this bill does deal with a rather sensitive area of law, I can see that we would have a member in our body stand up and say that because of where this bill is, so I would prefer them, but... Representative Kahn, I used to think the consent calendar was an advantage, but now it's just one more motion that someone can do to take it off, and then it gets one step further away from passage. So thank you, though, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you. Okay, Kalen's first go. Okay, let's go.
That could be a consent calendar.
He's stuck in traffic. Oh, he's asleep. Okay.
Okay. Morning, Mr. Chair. I'll move House File 3735. Have it before the committee, and I have a...
Wait, hold it. Representative Kalen, which one are you moving?
Whichever one you would like. I think we're prepared to proceed with 3735, the... Deaf and Hard of Hearing Commission.
I've got on the agenda Senate File 3364 or House File 3702.
The Senate file I believe that you're referencing is the companion bill to House File 3735.
Yes. All right. Yes.
Which is the correct, Mr. Malander? Okay. Great. And I, Mr. Chair, do you have the AO8-1221 delete everything amendment?
I believe we do. We have it? Just one second.
Do we ever delete everything?
Just Representative Kale, and I don't think we've got to delete everything amendment. Representative Cannon, we're working on Senate File 3364, correct? Representative Cannon, Mr. Shepard's going to come up. And
thank you. Sorry for the delay, Mr. Shepard. Mr. Chair, I believe that you have the language of Senate File 3364 before you. We'd like to work from that language, but we're still actually working on the House file. Is that the thing, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Shepard shaking his head no.
The committee does have the Senate file in our possession?
We have the Senate.
Okay. My apologies, Mr. Chair. All right.
So, Representative Taylor, why don't you, if you have it, what was your initial motion here?
Just to bring the bill before us, but I will withdraw that motion and move that Senate File 3364 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
All right, there we go.
Great. And Mr. Chair and members, this is a bill dealing with some technical changes to the commission serving the deaf and hard of hearing Minnesotans, and actually some name change and some other minor changes. And with me is Mary Hartnett to describe those changes.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Mary Hartnett. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Commission Serving Deaf and Hard of Hearing People. Thank you, Representative Kalin, for introducing this bill and chief authoring, and thank you, members of the committee, for allowing me to testify today. This is pretty much of a technical bill. Members of our committee, our commission, we have 15 governor-appointed commissioners. They've all would like to have the name changed to reflect all of the members of the population that we serve, deaf, blind, and hard of hearing. Right, currently our name is the Minnesota Commission Serving Deaf and Hard of Hearing People. They'd like to change the name to the Commission of Deaf, Blind, and Hard of Hearing Minnesotans. They'd also like to be able to hold their meetings electronically. 8 of our members come from 8 advisory councils that are statewide. It's difficult for them to make it on a regular basis to the meetings. They'd like to be able to participate in the meetings electronically upon occasion, and we also are changing, the only other changes are changes to include our to make specific what we already do. It confines right now in statute the advice that we provide and the advocacy we provide for state agencies, and actually over time in the 23 years that we've been providing services to the state and to the people of Minnesota, we've provided our advice and support and advocacy to all 3 branches of state government and all of the state agencies. So those are the changes.
Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Kalin?
Nothing to add. I think Ms. Hartnett, as usual, explained the bill very thoroughly, and it really is a technical change, Mr. Chair, other than the name change.
So, Representative Kalin, you want to renew your motion?
I will renew that motion.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Representative Kalin, the next bill is House File 3702.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move House File 3702. Be recommended to pass, and I believe referred to sent to the General Register. And I believe, Mr. Gehring, there's an amendment. I don't know if that amendment has been distributed. I actually don't have it, but I can even just describe it.
Well, if we have it, I'd prefer that.
It should be the A1 amendment.
Great. We have it.
I do have the amendment before me. So, Mr. Chair, I will move the A1 amendment as a cleanup change on line 14, and then removes the new language. The last sentence of the bill.
Representative Kalin, what your initial motion was to do what with the bill?
Was to recommend it to pass and refer it to the General Register.
All right, so that's the initial motion. Then the amendment?
I have moved the A1 amendment.
And what does the A1 amendment do?
It the bill deals with an election contest and the cost of complaints, and the aim is to assess those costs against the local jurisdiction where the election is held. So with just a technical change on line 14, removing the word contest, so we're actually just referring to the where the election is actually held that is being contested. And then the administrative law judges have asked for us to, over at admin, have asked us to delete the last line of new language. So we are removing that, the proposed new language that starts on line 1.18.
All right. All those in favor of the Kalin amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill is amended. So to the bill is amended, Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief background, and then I'll hand it over to Kevin Corbett from Washington County. This bill came to us as proposed by the county auditors and treasurers. Just a little bit of cleanup as we're in the new world of the changed election contest statutes. As we know, they've been moved from the county attorney to the administrative law judge process, and so we've had a few contests in Chisago and Washington County where the county has paid for the cost of the contest, of the complaint, when they've actually been city elections in the cities of Wyoming and Harris specifically. A few $1,000 each. I think one was $9,000, one was a little bit less. And to speak more specifically about the Washington County experience and generally is Mr. Kevin Corbin.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Kevin Corbin. I am the Director of Property Records and Taxpayer Services in Washington County. We oversee the election function in the county. Representative Kalin described the bill very thoroughly. We are just making a change that if there are election complaints that are handled by the Office of Administrative Hearings that are for local jurisdictions other than the county, that those costs would be assessed to either that township, school, or city. If it's a complaint on a county election, the county will continue to fund the costs. The amendment that was adopted took out any of the state costs that were included in this bill as originally drafted. That would have required that the fines imposed against a candidate or official first would have went to offset the cost of the OAH, where they now go to the general fund. Since there was a state cost, we've deleted that provision, and there's no state general fund impact any longer. In Washington County, we've had a number of complaints filed over the last 4 years for a total of about $30,000. The largest one is about a $20,000 complaint in the city of Grant. I know that in Ramsey County, they've had roughly $50,000 in costs assessed to them that have not been county issues. And so we just believe that whichever jurisdiction the complaint is filed against or about should handle the cost. With that, I'll answer any questions you might have.
Any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I forgot your name again.
Kevin Corbett.
Mr. Corbett, would this include precincts at all, or?
Mr. Corbett.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I understand the question. Would this been?
Well, maybe could you give me a, Mr. Chair, Mr. Corbett, could you give me a little definition of what the local jurisdiction would include? And we had a bill come through, and I can't remember whose it was, but it talked about having recounts on even just a singular precinct level. And I'm just curious, would a local jurisdiction include just the precinct itself?
Mr. Corbett.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, that the local jurisdictions would be defined as the governing bodies of either the city, the township, the school district, if it was a school election. It would not be assessed against an individual precinct within those jurisdictions. So if there is, for example, I'll give you an example of the kind of a complaint we're talking about. In Washington County, our most expensive complaint, there was a flyer produced by a organization that was advocating or against a levy increase by a city. There was a complaint issued that the information provided in that document was not fair, was not truthful. So there was a complaint filed against the official and the group that were dealing with that. And so the OAH gets involved, and looks at those complaints and determines if they've got merit, and they go through all their hearing process. So in that case, it was in that city, the costs were sent to the county auditor's office for payment, and in that, and under our bill, instead of going to the county auditor for payment, it would go to the city for payment.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, maybe perhaps Representative Taylor can answer this question. Where do the cities and the school districts sit on this issue? Have you gotten their opinion on this matter at all?
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, I have not. The bill has been introduced for over a month, and I know that there's been regular conversation. I think Mr. Corbin might be able to speak to it, but I think it's just a fairness issue that the jurisdiction that's holding the election should bear the cost of it, and it's a minor issue in terms of the overall impact, but maybe Mr. Corby could speak to that conversation.
Mr. Chair, representatives, lobbyists for the County Offices Association did make the cities and towns and schools aware of the bill, and their response was that they weren't, you know, excited about it and having additional costs imposed upon them, but they seemed to understand the concept that it may be fair that their jurisdictions handle these costs. I know that this is not a new issue. About 2.5 years ago, the county officers actually met with the officials from the Office of Administrative Hearings, the League of Minnesota Cities. I don't remember if the townships were involved, but we had a meeting about 2 years ago. We talked about the process that was happening at the OAH on how the costs were distributed. At that time, there was a discussion that said, can you just wait a little while on proposing this to see how this thing all shakes out and what the costs are like? So at that time, we did that. We pulled the bill back. We waited a couple of years, and now it's brought this forward again. There's no complaint on how it's being handled at the OAH. The issue really is about just who's going to pay what bills are coming out of those hearings. So it's not a new issue to them, and I think it's fair to say they're not excited about it, but I don't believe if they want to speak, but I think there's at least someone here from the township that they're interested. So.
Any further discussion? No. All right, Representative.
I'll renew my motion that House File 3702 be recommended to pass and refer to the general register as amended.
All right. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. President Atkins, he's here, I believe. Where is
Good morning,
members. Representative Atkins, before you start, members, on the agenda, we inadvertently combined the Kaplan and Atkins bill under Roman numeral 10. So it's here. It just isn't separate. So, Representative Atkins, I'll move that Senate File 2402 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doesn't that mean, though, that our bill just passed?
No, it doesn't until we're done with it. They haven't voted yet. It's a little thing, but those votes do count.
Yeah, I know. They get kind of persnickety about that. Mr. Chair, the posture that this bill is now in, since the Senate file passes 60-0 off the floor, and since then, through the House process, we have made a few changes to the House file that we would like to have reflected in the Senate file as it goes back, and then it's my understanding that the Senate author will simply concur. Those changes, as you know, the process right now is getting, we're awaiting the amendment from the reviser. I do have this version, which I believe is acceptable, but I'll leave that to the chair's good judgment.
Could you give it to Mr. Chair?
Absolutely. And we have, Mr. Chair, one more committee stop. So we would have an opportunity to clean it up if, in fact, there's any problem. But this is precisely the language that has gone on in the House.
Hold it. My motion was to send it to the general register. So if you have one more committee stop, where should this have gone?
Mr. Chair, it should be referred to the Higher Ed and Workforce Development. There is a small fiscal issue.
All right. I'm going to withdraw my initial motion. And then I will move that Senate File 2402 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Finance, and then Finance will send it down through its laborious methods to whatever one of those committees you need to go to. So that's the motion that's before us.
I need to have Mr. Shepard take a look at your amendment and see if this does work. So if we can just pause for a second.
Sure. The other thing, Mr. Chair, if you'd like, we can kind of walk through the bill.
All right. Why don't you do that while Shepard. He's looking? President Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very briefly, this makes some relatively minor but important changes on behalf of the accountancy board. There's been no objection from anyone, everybody that has been consultants, and that is literally everybody that we can think of that would be impacted. Has not taken issue with anything. This just makes for a much smoother process for our accountants. And with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Hyde for some very brief testimony relative to the points that are before this committee in governmental operations.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Robert Hyde. I live in Plymouth, Minnesota, and I am the chair of the board of the board's legislation and rules committee. As Representative Atkins has said, we have gone through quite a process to make sure the bill is in agreement with everyone. The specific issues before the committee here are those dealing with rules, I believe. Three items in particular. One is that we requested an expedited rules process in connection with this legislative change so that we can particularly get out to those college students where an early examination will be a possibility for them taking the CPA exam early to try to get that implemented as soon as possible. We have prepared the rules. We're ready to go. And so we are really kind of looking forward to that. So that primarily is the significant change. There's lots of mention to rules in this document, but really the only significant change is the one that one in particular. So I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Members, again, if you refer to the Shepard memo, there, the page numbers and lines of the bill are listed if you have any concerns. Mr. Shepard, what about the amendment? The amendment works, so I will move the amendment to Senate File 2402. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill is amended. Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, then I'll renew my motion that Senate File 2402 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative.
Members, thank you.
Davin?
Is he here?
He was. He's gone again. Representative Dabb.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Members.
Appreciate the opportunity to present House File 3516 before the committee. Mr. Chair, there is an A3 amendment and an A4 amendment to the A3 amendment.
All right, Representative Dabney, let's see what we have here. All right, Representative Dabney, the bill itself, the initial motion, does this bill go to the General Register?
I believe that it can after the amendment, yes, sir.
All right, after the amendment. In its current state, it could not?
In the current state, the bill as it stands could, yes.
All right, I'll move that House File 3516 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. And then, which is the first amendment that you'd like?
The first amendment is the H3516A3 amendment.
All right. This one?
The big one.
All right. Before I move this, why don't you tell us what this is?
I'd actually like to ask the testifiers to speak to it more authoritatively.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Bert Black, and I'm the legal advisor with the Secretary of State's office.
And the A3 amendment you see before you is the text of House File 3790, which has been heard and passed by the Commerce Committee and the Committee on Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs. And Mr. Chairman and members, when we were in the Commerce Committee, there was a little bit of a communications question between other House staff, and it was the impression of some folks that this was, the bill was headed directly to the floor, and so local government requested it. Otherwise, I think we would have been here last Thursday. So the bill has been passing through without opposition. It relates to the Electronic Real Estate Recording Commission. As you may know, there's been an Electronic Real Estate Recording Task Force that's been before this commission a number of times during the past 9 years, since 2000, 8 years. And that commission is expiring on June 30th. And we need to move the commission, the task force, and the electronic recordings it does into the mainstream of property law. And the task force has been working on this along with the real estate sector. And the bill itself is there's no question about the need for the bill. And also here today is Michael Kniff, who is the Hennepin County Recorder, who can speak to the substance of what you have in the A3 Amendment. And the A3 Amendment is the first engrossment. Mr. Shepard prepares it directly from the first engrossment of that bill. So this is the work product of the committee.
Mm-hmm. Hi, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Mike Kniff. I am the Hennepin County Recorder and Registrar of Titles, and I'm also a member of the Electronic Recording Task Force that Mr. Black just referenced. The bill that you have in front of you is really the culmination of a significant number of years of work of getting to the point where we can create standards to be able to record real estate documents electronically. And we have done pilots over the last 7 years, and we're to the point now where the language that you've got in front of you now makes it a possibility to have a permanent commission to establish and maintain those standards, and then also to amend the what I call a fairly routine recording statute to allow for electronic information to be incorporated as well as the old paper form, so that you have things that are amended in here that talk about electronic facsimiles rather than just the old-fashioned stamp. You've got ways to put things into electronic indexes rather than just into books and that type of thing, and those are some of the amendments that you see in the legislation.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could make two other points. Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members, number one, this 3790 has been circulated and discussed with the real property section, and they have no objections to it. And the other point is that the 3790 bill on last Friday was referred to this committee, although I don't know if the committee report has shown up yet, by the Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs Committee.
Mm-hmm. All right, members, any further discussion to the A3 amendment that you have before you? I'll move the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Then, Representative Dan, do you have another amendment?
That's correct. The A4 amendment, the H3516A4 amendment, amends the A3 amendment that the committee just adopted. Most importantly, perhaps, on page 1, line 4 of the A4 amendment, deleting text on page 3 of the A3 amendment deletes the rulemaking provision that was in the A3 amendment, which takes the fiscal note to zero. There was a very small, less than $1,000 fiscal note. This eliminates that, and the rest of the text of the A4 amendment I would describe as comfort language requested by the Legislative Coordinating Commission.
Any discussion to the A4 amendment? Seeing none, I'll move the A4 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Any other amendments like that?
None. No more amendments, Mr. Chair.
All right, then to the bill as amended.
Mr. Chair and members, the 3516 legislation is a product of the foreclosure crisis working groups that met through the summer and fall and into the early winter this year on a variety of topics. This one focused on data collection around foreclosures. It's one of the key challenges as we try to confront this crisis is the lack of data or the difficulty in getting data. Section 2 of the bill simply requires richer information going to the occupant of the foreclosed property. For instance, if you are either the owner-occupant or a renter of the foreclosed property and are served with the foreclosure notice, currently that notice does not include the address of the property you reside in, which creates for many people a misunderstanding or an uncertainty as to what this document was and what it applies to. We simply require that information so that it's clear to the recipient. Then later on Section 3, starting on page 2, line 9, is a study to develop a statewide foreclosure data collection and reporting system. This will be under the Secretary of State's office. They have agreed to do this without charge and are very committed to it. In fact, in the last committee, we amended it so that it had an immediate effective date because they want to get moving on this issue in recognition of the ongoing crisis we have around foreclosures in the state. I believe Mr. Kniff and Mr. Black have spoken to the A3 and A4 amendments thoroughly already, although we stand for questions on any of the bills.
Let them pass.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to get back essentially to the amendment we adopted, which got rid of the rules. On page 3, section 5, what happens when you create standards to implement this act? What effect do standards have?
Mr. Black, you want to address that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Kahn. If you look at chapter 14, you'll see that chapter 14, the rulemaking chapter, exempts various things from what is rulemaking. So, for example, I think the closest parallel I can give you is the uniform conveyancing blanks. The uniform conveyancing blanks are are set forth by the Commissioner of Commerce. There is a uniform conveyancing blank advisory form. The conveyancing blank in the paper world is very similar to this these standards. The standards we're talking about are for computer schema, and the standards we have now in the pilot project, in fact, you can see on our website, it's a long computer program that I used to understand, but I haven't. I'm not a computer person. I'm just a lawyer. The standards, if you look, Representative Kahn, if you look in the A3 amendment on, let me find the page here. I'm sorry, I think it's in the conforming changes. If you look at page 12, lines 4 through 14, the standards are referenced there, and in fact the standards are what allow the electronic filings to have effect. That is to say, if you file conforming to the standards, that your real estate transaction will be valid just as if you'd filed on paper. If you don't file according to the standards, then that becomes a more questionable thing in terms of going to court. But this is a county, I have to let you know, this is a county option. It's the counties who are going to implement this. They're not required to take electronic filing, and Mr. Kniff may speak to this as well. The counties are the ones that are going to be implementing the standards through their software system. And there's a substantial benefit to the counties in terms of, and to citizens, in terms of speeding up this process. But that's why this doesn't need rulemaking, because it is similar to other things that we have already exempted from rulemaking, and it is a voluntary thing county by county, and it's also voluntary with respect to the people filing. You don't have to file electronically. We're just saying if you do file electronically, you need to follow the computer standards, because otherwise it's going to get, it's just going to come back, it's going to bounce back, and computer gobbledygook.
Listen, Con, does that answer your question?
All right.
Any further questions? Seeing no further questions, then I'll renew my motion that House File 3516, as amended significantly, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Member.
Thank you.
Representative Mariani was here. I saw him a second ago. We have an amendment. Does the page have an amendment for this bill, Representative Mariani's bill?
Yeah.
If you do, why don't you pass that amendment out now? Thank you. He just walked in and then he left.
He appears to be going to his office.
Who's the second one?
I know that. And this goes to
where we can.
Representative Mariani. As I understand it, House File 3316 is going to go to the General Register, is that correct?
That's correct.
Then I'll move that House File 3316 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. Representative Mariani, there's a significant amendment, the 820.
That's correct.
Would you like to speak to the 820 amendment before we move it?
Sir, Mr. Chair, members, it would help to know that House Bill 3316 is an effort to the Omnibus Education Policy Bill. We started with the...
Listen, Mayor, could you move the mic just a little closer, please? Thanks.
We started, Mr. Chair, with the Department's Technical Policy Bill, and then we used it as a vehicle to amend on to it last week. For the most part, language from bills that the Policy Committee had acted on prior and had moved along in the process. And there's some additional amendments as well. Part of the reason we did that, Mr. Chair, is because, you know, the short time frame of this schedule, the tight deadline, a number of those bills needed to travel through kind of long corridors, if you will, and some of them are actually still stuck in those corridors and may not make deadlines. And so we wanted to make sure the policy that we had acted on would see the light of the day at the end of the day. The amendment before you then does several things. It does updating language from some of those bills as they move through some of the committees. For instance, there were two that were in data privacy and are still in the judiciary stream. There have been some amendments that have been offered and accepted. And so we're updating language for those bills as they have moved in some of those other little corridors. There are also some correction language. You know, every time you go through it and go through the bill, you're always going to find, you know, little tweaks, little technical things that you might as well fix now because it's easier to fix it now than later on the floor. There are some corrective language that has to do with intent of the committee on some of the bills, again, that we passed forward, partly because we moved some of them a little bit too hastily, so we wanted to stay very tightly constructed to the intent of the committee. And then amended some language here which addresses the task force issues, which are the purview within this committee. So in other words, we're shaping up the task forces to the best that we can so that we've got minimal or no fiscal impact, and we're also much more clear about the structure of those task forces. And so, Mr. Chair, that's basically the amendment. There's a lot of little provisions in there, but those are sort of the three characteristics of the amendment. Our intent is to stay true to the intent of the committee and to fix up the language and update it so that it mirrors these separate bills, many of which have been changed and which are currently sitting inside this bill.
Aye. Members, with that explanation, I'll move the A20 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill is amended. Representative Mariano, see the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have my latest sheet here, but there are several task forces here, and I'll walk through them very quickly. My understanding is this committee wants to have a discussion about its purview to talk about committees, advisory committees, and task forces and expedited rulemaking. In Article 2, there's an advisory committee having to do with the adequate yearly process determination of the commissioner, and it sets up an appeals advisory committee for that. There'll be five members of that committee that include teachers, parents, school boards, school administrators, and individuals from Commerce. I may ask staff to help me here. I had actually written these notes last night, but I typed them in the computer. I did not get here in time to print this out. But on the cost side of that, the language with the amendment is meant to reflect that reimbursements will happen if funds are available. And not sure about the expiration date. I don't know if I should ask this wrong. Oh. Well, she comes forward. Oh, yeah, do you know what this person did? Yeah. Okay, so Mr. Chair, the advisory, the appeals advisory committee then does not have an expiration date. It will be an ongoing process. There's a charter school advisory council that actually already exists in law. The department actually had this in the bill, so this was their request. This was an oversight on all our parts, the executive branch and legislative branch, and we allowed that to actually expire last year. It was not the intent to have that expire, and so we'll continue that advisory council forward. There's seven members of that advisory council, of course, is subject to section 15.059. So that one does not expire either. Mr. Chair, there's a American Indian Education Committee. There currently is not a committee. This is not a department request. This was a result of a Representative Clark bill. There's currently a task force. Some of you may know that historically, at least as long as I've been here and beyond, there's been some form of a committee in the education department, an advisory committee of some sort dealing with American Indian education. There were changes made to that in the last session, splitting up some of those functions, and we lost the sort of formal language to have an advisory committee on education for American Indians. So we want to reintroduce that. As I mentioned, there is currently a task force, so we would hope to build off of that task force. The members are expected to represent the different tribal jurisdictions as well as American Indian community teachers, program officers, and administrators. And they will serve without compensation. That was done in the amendment, the 2020 amendment. And members, that would be subject to 15.059 in terms of its expiration date. And I believe 15.059 says that if there is no expiration date stated in statute, then 15.059 provides that they would continue 2 years beyond the enactment date, which means that they would have to come back in 2 years. Mr. Chair, staff points out that on this one we're saying that the expiration would be no later than June 30th, 2020, so we are not silent on that issue as American Indian Education Committee. Mr. Chair, remember, there are three groups that are being asked to be convened by the commissioner. This is dealing with a representative Brainerd bill in regards to the school report card. Let's go to the extent of my notes here. We are prescriptive about the types of individuals that will serve on the first one of these, which is a group related to the student growth-based value-added system. What we'll be doing is developing a model on along the lines of a growth-based value-added paradigm to introduce into the school report card. This group will consist primarily of school district evaluators and assessment individuals, as well as other educators. Most of that work, members, has already been done. I want to point out that while this is new, we've been funding the Department of Education for at least two bienniums for the development of a value-added model, and the department has had some progress in developing a growth model, but as far as I can tell, has not had any progress in regards to developing a value-added model. In terms of expiration for this group, and while we're looking that up, it would not be the expectation that these would be compensated. This would expire on June 30th, 2009, this group. This is really meant to be a very short-term presence. That's similar to the next two advisory groups that are being asked to be convened. The next one has to do with developing a rigorous coursework measurement to be reported within the report card. That one will expire on June 30th, 2011. And then the third one would be a similar group convened to develop measurements related to student safety and engagement. And that one expires on June 30th, 2009. Members, there's also a task force as a representative. This is my bill. a task force, a one-time task force, short-term task force developed to address what we call the achievement gap issues in the state of Minnesota having to do with disparities between students of color and white students in terms of educational outcomes as measured by standard educational outcome measurements. We're creating a process where we're going to be soliciting information from districts. The commissioner is being asked to analyze and translate that information back to the legislature and then use this task force to further do the analysis of that work. That task force will serve without compensation. That was in the 820 amendment. And we'll look up the expiration date here. I don't know if we have an expiration date. Expiration date of February 16, 2009. So again, a short-term effort. And then, members, there's a Representative Erdahl bill that creates an advisory task force on improving teacher quality. And that task force will also have language that says in the 820 amendment that members of the task force serve without compensation, and the advisory task force expires on February 16, 2009. And again, that's in the amendment that we just adopted. Let's see. Oh, and then, members, there is an existing task force dealing with special education issues that was created last year to do a review of our statutes and rules related to special ed. It's been a terrific group. They've done most of their work. It's been exhaustive work. They need a little bit more time to finish that work, and so we're going to extend out that task force for another year, and then we're asking them to also look at particularly two, or at least one, very difficult area of around which rules are being attempted to be promulgated. It's a highly contentious issue, and so this This task force is part of essentially a compromise, if you will, an agreement between all the players, the parent advocates, the regulators, including the Department of Education, and ourselves in the legislature. And so that task force will be extended out to February 15, 2009. And then in terms of groups, the final one is the Department of Education request. This has to do with the Advisory Committee for the Minnesota Braille and Talking Book Library. That is an ongoing group. The issue here has to do with allowing them to conduct certain meetings under certain conditions using telephone or other electronic means. So that's it in terms of the task forces. There are two expedited rulemaking provisions in the bill. The first one has to do with Representative Winkler bill. He's on the committee, so he can explain this as well. And this has to do with the development of statewide technology standards and directives for school districts. And in the process of doing that work, we're going to pursue it again. This is through an agreement. Actually, I don't think we've agreed on that. We're going to pursue through an expedited rulemaking process for the department to move forward with those efforts. The department has been moving forward in developing guidelines. Representative Winkler, I think, has wisely chosen to have us move forward through a rulemaking process, albeit expedited. And then the final rulemaking provision is an expedited rulemaking provision related to special ed, to that special ed issue that I raised. There is at least one very difficult issue that has been highly contentious, aversive and deprivation procedures, highly controversial in the special ed community. The commissioner was moving ahead, attempting to do some rulemaking. All parties have wisely decided to back off on that, allow that task force to address that issue. But in the meantime, there is some rulemaking that needs to be done because last year the federal government, perhaps the year before the federal government, had done some major changes to special ed processes, which requires us to do some rulemaking to conform with that. The committee is comfortable and the commissioner is agreeable to pursuing an expedited rulemaking process in that regard. So members, that's it. Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Mr. Mariani, this is the omnibus
K-12 policy.
No. And all of these task forces, there's no compensation at all for any of them?
No. Mr. Chair, for the new ones, no, that's correct. There are no compensation for it. There are a number of these are very short-term task forces intended to expire within a year.
All right. I'm just making sure that if this goes to the general registry, we don't have another motion to pull it back into finance.
Well, and Mr. Chair, for the record, you certainly have my intention that if any of those issues arise that are substantive in terms of fiscal costs, that I will either pull them into the necessary finance team or I'll move to strike them from the bill.
All right. Any further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mariani, perhaps you said this earlier, but on the amendment that we adopted here, was that communicated with the members of the Education Policy Committee, and was everybody on board with this amendment? I saw that you deleted some sections, and I just wanted to make sure, since it seems like this amendment is definitely out of our purview.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, and members, the intent here, again, is to no, this particular amendment has not been vetted with the committee members. We're moving pretty quickly through in a pretty short session. However, I can tell you that the language of this bill reflects issues that the committees have gone over. They have sent those bills out, understanding that there would be some amendments and changes to those bills. For instance, they had two bills that went to data, Representative Simon's committee on data policy, privacy issues. We fully expected some changes because they have the wisdom around those issues. And so some of this language is planned. That, the only issue that might be a little bit different might be the language right up front where this is a bill that I had that had to do with data sharing information, which was carefully worked out over the course of several years, actually, between post-secondary and K-12 education. We heard those provisions in three education committees. We originally stripped the language out of the policy, the department's technical bill, because we expected it to have to go through a long corridor, and we didn't want the whole bill to travel with it. It has, in fact, vetted through that process. I'm now reintroducing that language. The committee spent a Friday afternoon going over the entire department provisions that included that provision, and we had that discussion.
All right.
Okay, so this language does, in fact, reflect exactly the language that came out of the Data Practices Committee.
All right, recommend.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Murray. I appreciate that. The other question that I had for you is related to Article 2, Section 22. And I'm just curious. My husband is a teacher, and he talks about staff development money quite often. And I'm curious as to why you decided to exclude teacher workshops and teacher conferences and in-service education from staff development funds. Can you maybe explain that?
Yeah.
Representative Marianne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, good question. We fixed it in the amendment.
Okay, you did. Okay. And how did you fix it? Let me just ask you that.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. The language, we did two things here. One, there were two sections dealing with that provision. There was the revenue section and the program section. We had done changes to one, but not to the other. This is kind of our bad in terms of wanting to fix the mix. We would have done this on the floor anyway. But in terms of your question, what we're doing is we're returning the language back to current practice.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Any other discussion? No other discussion. Representative
Cox. Chairman, I was just looking at this bill on page 68 of the bill. It's just a really little change we could make on line 68.9. What if we change the 16 to 18? That's a technical amendment.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I actually have that bill.
Yeah. Why didn't you put it in?
I think it's probably really good education policy for the state. My understanding is that at first that there's a huge fiscal cost that would generate.
Representative Kahn.
Not to the state.
Representative Mariani.
Someone's going to, Mr. Chair, remember, someone's going to pay for it. It'll be reflected in a state fiscal note, the change. And we apparently have been down this road a few times in the last decade or so, and it's generated quite a bit of controversy. I actually agree with the direction. I think we should set that expectation. And I think if it costs, we ought to pay for that. But it's actually highly complex and highly controversial and highly expensive at this point.
Any other?
That's supposed to dissuade me from making the motion to do it.
Representative Kahn, we would never dissuade you from doing anything.
I don't think it's possible anyway.
Representative Mariani? You want to add anything?
Mr. Chair and members, I want to thank you for your indulgence. I was actually shoveling snow about 20 minutes ago, and I thought, okay, number 4 or 5 in the agenda, I'll have time to kind of calmly walk in here, grab a cup of coffee. But I thought I ran a pretty tight and efficient and quick-moving committee, but I tip my hats off to this committee. I want to thank you for the review. I think it's absolutely appropriate that the committee come back here to review these task force provisions, and actually it allowed us the extra time to really focus on those and come forward with language, which I think is very workable in terms of what sort of structuring these task forces and really minimizing the cost that they would impart. So I appreciate the opportunity to have to be able to have done that.
Red 10 Paling on my list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope that you'll appreciate this. You and I haven't had a chance to talk about one of my passions in education, which is ultimately scrapping the outdated MCAs and switching to the value-added growth model of the measures of academic progress at NALTS. And I see that there's a lot of really good progress in this bill. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we're still kind of poking along, I think I can kind of engine getting up the hill here. Representative Mariani, how soon do you think, not having had a chance to review every single relevant section of the bill, how soon will we be able to make that change, assuming that we can fully fund Representative Winkler's technology initiative as well?
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, members, there's several questions there. One is, I don't think we're going to move rapidly in the state in regards to that, in large part due to the fact that we are captive to federal government's mandates insofar as we want to accept the substantive amount of change that we receive from them for Title I funding. Nonetheless, I think all members here probably understand and believe that the NCLB framework is going to change. It's not going to change this year, apparently, in Washington, D.C., but I think we're looking at substantive changes within the next 2 years, regardless of who is in the White House. And I think part of what this bill does is it allows us, it begins to position us to be able to respond to that change in as proactive way as possible. And in my opinion, that does have to do with the use of formative assessments and the ability to have measurements in place that recognize growth and value-added inputs and really begins to tilt and balance, I think, our understandings and our measurements of our schools so that we're not just approaching it from a one-dimensional, almost punitive approach, but really also in a diagnostic, helpful way. By using the report card, which is not, the ruling assessment frame, but it is a reporting measurement, we're able to go further down the road with the use of those formative tools than we can currently under the tight federal restrictions. Also, Representative Winkler's bill, I think we're taking some steps here with the computer adaptive assessments that Representative Winkler sets up, which allows us to develop the infrastructure by which we can, in fact, be able to implement formative assessments in the state.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know what how broad we're going to just talk about technology in the schools and at the state when we have that hearing. I don't know if I imagine it's going to happen later this session or we won't be convening.
It will happen after bill deadline, and we will have an assessment of the technology.
Great. One of the things that I think to this computer adaptive issue and kind of fast-tracking, scaling up as fast as we can what we know works. I think oftentimes we kind of take our time a little bit too much, and there may be resistance from the department or others, but the St. Clair River Education District is in my district, and I've seen even in first and second grade, the response to intervention that was funded last year statewide now has been working for several years, and the technology piece that can actually identify problems that are happening, can identify challenges that are happening in the schools quickly and actually be evidence of problems happening at home, not only in terms of classroom intervention, but also sort of the larger intervention of getting parents and families more involved and more stable. And I hope that, Mr. Chair, that we might be able to involve SCRED and the good work that they've been doing when we do our technology assessment in this committee. I think it's going to be really critical to having a 21st century world-class education system again in Minnesota.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, having two experts in education in front of me, I'd like to ask one question. Are we doing anything to require more fluency in foreign language anywhere in our school system in the K-12?
Representative Marianne.
Mr. Chair, members, we had at least a couple of bills last year that attempted to create standards, statewide standards, including high-stakes standards.
in regards to that. We didn't bite on that. We've had several initiatives in the state to promote, other language competency. Most recently, in the last few years, we had Governor Polanyi's initiative around Mandarin Chinese, for instance. We also, that's a good provision. We also have lots of young people in our K-12 system who actually speak what we would consider a foreign language, another language, from East Africa, from Latin America, from Asia. And unfortunately, we often think of them as deficits. So, you'll find them in ELL programs and bilingual education programs, which are excellent programs because we certainly want them to become competent in English, but at the same time, we're not recognizing and acknowledge the fact that they were quite competent in, from our perspective, another language. And so we codified in state statute last year a small provision. I think it's an important one, given that we're talking about an ever-increasing share of our K-12 population. We codified a recognition of that reality and required the Commissioner of Education to develop a certification process that in essence would parallel, what we traditionally think of as sort of second language acquisition, so that we can acknowledge and credit these students with the fact that they have competency in another language.
Well,
if we're talking about worldwide competition and so forth, and just following my granddaughter in Montreal, who was in kindergarten, is required to be not just exposed to, but fluent in two languages at the end of sixth grade and fluent in three languages by the end of high school. And that's a fairly close neighbor to ours. So, I just wonder how far we're going to be falling behind this worldwide market.
Mr. Chair, Mr. McCown, there's also a lot of action activity coming forward from our American Indian tribal communities in this regard. The other issue related to second language competency has to do with, neurologists are beginning to map this out, that there actually is a theory that's posted that says that there are certain neurological stimulants that occur in the process of learning two languages or more, which may be beneficial for just overall learning at all. And so if you take control groups of kids that are in the process of second language and other language acquisition, they tend to perform pretty well across the board on academic subjects. So the issue isn't just the right to issue you talked about in terms of placing ourselves in a global context to be able to communicate around the world, but it also has to do with lifting our own ability, our own cognitive abilities among our young through the use of second language acquisition.
Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 3316 is amended, be recommended to pass, and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative
Mariani. Thank you, Member.
Representative Morgan, do you have a motion for us?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes of Wednesday, March 12.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Meeting is adjourned.